Hello, and welcome back to Behind the Screens. This episode, all about artificers. I am joined by the lovely, talented Arxanity here, voice of Antigone Florakis in Flavored Enemy, and soon-to-be voice of Iante Florakis QC in Flavored Enemy Regnum Vitetium. Thank you for joining me tonight.
Thank you for having me. It's very excited just to be nominated.
Well, I will admit, when I was not expecting Artificer to be chosen this early.
I also was so shocked that it was chosen this early, because I didn't pick it this early. But no. I'm glad that that people are into it.
Yeah, I mean, and I will say Artificer was the only class to be added to the original, the officially added. Technically, yes, Bloodhunter is out there, but that is considered homebrew.
It's just given it's a little spin of a stamp of approval by
Blue, our Wizards of the Coast was like, hey, yeah, you know what, you're fine,
you're okay, we'll accept you. Come into
so
our
it
arms.
It is the only added class to the original classes for D&D 5th edition. So that's a nice little thing. I personally love it. I think it's a cool addition that definitely allows for some outside the box thinking and definitely some creative builds, not only mechanically but definitely RP wise, which is what we will be predominantly talking about.
Yeah, don't tonight. Ask. I am not, I'm not a mechanical genius, but good lord, do I love to roleplay.
Yes. So we will start off with, I guess I'll kind of give a quick description of what the Artificer is. Artificers are kind of mechanical savants in a way. They have inventions. They blend technology,
engineers,
and magic. They are the engineers of the fantasy world. And they have all sorts of cool things they can do. They can build magical armors. Like, they can build an entire suit of armor. Like, if you want to be Iron Man, this is a class for you. They can have mechanical pets. If you want to have a pet class, but you don't want to be the shitty ranger, this is another good class for you. If you like having attunement slots.
Oh my god.
This is a class for you.
If you want to attune to fucking everything under the sun, this is where you need to hang out.
This is a class for you. If you play with a DM that doesn't give a lot of magical items, this is another good class for you, because you can just
make
your own.
You don't want to give me a magic item? Joke's on you, bitch. I'm making the magical item. Can't stop me, won't stop me.
I will say the one mechanic I will get into right away, if you want to be the ultimate backseat gamer, Flash of Genius,
it's a
seventh level ability, which lets you add your intelligence modifier to any d20 roll.
I didn't end up having access to that, I don't think, until the last fight or the fight right before that one.
I think you did have it.
Yeah, I don't remember because I'm a dumbass. Mike, who plays Ghost, was just like, hey, bitch, you need to make sure you use this because we need it desperately badly.
It is an incredibly powerful ability, but we will probably get into that later.
For sure.
Right now, our first topic, as always, that I like to get into is backgrounds that people may not think of for Artificer that you want people to be aware of. Like, I think people are kind of aware of, like, the obvious, like, I think, like, Clan Crafter is kind of the easiest go-to, because, like, okay, this is already somebody who does crafting.
Yes.
Like, it's not that difficult to do that. Kind of same thing with Failed Merchant. Like, it kind of has that same vibe a little bit. But
yes.
What are some options that you think that people might not look at, or that might be kind of overlooked in campaigns?
Yeah, so I have to talk about Tig just because she is my artificer, she's my baby, she's my heart and my soul. Tig was guild merchant, that was her background, which makes perfect sense that, like, that's a pretty standard one, I would say. Like,
guild merchant or guild artisan is also
probably. Yeah, like, she came from working at her parents' shop. Like, that's where her background was. It was the only thing that made sense. I personally think that a really cool one that you could do as charlatan for mm-hmm. an artisan. I think the idea of being like almost like a snake oil salesman.
Somebody sort of pretending thing. To use magic, but is really pretending, using technology.
But really using technology, like very like the that. Wizard and Wizard of Oz, or even yes. like somebody who is like very proficient at building their stuff and still has magic or whatever, but like is selling it off as something else. Did you not start the stuff?
I didn't bring the bear into.
Damn, that's okay. We can start over.
I got to invite him to speak. Okay.
It's okay. At least you caught it pretty early.
I caught it early. Okay. I caught it early. Because I was wondering who was in the audience. So.
It's the bear. The bear's in the bear. Audience. He's hanging out.
All right. So, 5, 4. Hold on. Do you want me to introduce you as Archanity or Emma?
You can introduce me as Emma. Emma works.
Okay. Okay, cool.
Everybody 5, in here knows me as Emma, so.
4, 3, 2, 1. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Flavored Enemy Behind the Scenes. This episode, all about artificers. I am joined by the lovely, the talented Emma, a.k.a. Archanity, who is the voice of Antigone Florakis, QC now, and will be voicing Tig's daughter, Ianthe Florakis QC, in the upcoming Flavored Enemy Regnum Petitum. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. How are you doing? Are you excited for this? Just your opening thoughts.
I'm excited for this. Thank you for having me. It's an honor just to be nominated. I am shocked that Artificer got picked so early, because y'all did Paladins last time, and then now
Paladin also being first was very
was so wild.
I don't know what people's choice, like what their thought process is when they're voting.
I would love to know. I need to roll an insight check badly, as I will always.
Because famously, the Florakis household. Like,
exactly. That's terrible. Why it's badly. Terrible yes. at wisdom checks.
Awful at them. Famously. If anybody tells you, if you learn anything about the Florakis family, just terrible.
They're so bad at wisdom. It's insane.
But yeah, we're talking about artificers tonight. Mostly RP stuff. That is Emma's specialty.
That's my specialty. I'm not mechanically minded. Every time I have to do something super yes. mechanical, I do end up harassing yes. other people to help me, because yes. that's not how my brain works. But I love to RP shit, so I'm happy to tell you about how to build a fun character for artists.
Which is funny, because I know people who are like kind of mechanical people, they love the artificers, because their biggest thing is the extra attunement slots that lets you kind of mm-hmm. have so many. I think you get up to six.
You get up to six. Once you hit, if you hit level 20 in Artificer, that translates into, like, I want to say bonus. You're
saving you get a plus one. I'm looking it up right now. You get a plus one bonus of saving throws per magic item you're attuned to.
Potential plus six plus bonus, six. Which is bonkers.
Which also, considering some of the things you could possibly be attuned to, like a ring of protection. Mm-hmm. A cloak of protection, a stone of good luck.
It's all a very good come at me, bitch, sort yeah. of.
So, like, theoretically, you could be adding plus 9, 10.
It's gross. It's yeah. so gross, in, like, the best way possible.
Yeah. The other really cool, gross thing mechanically is the Flash of Genius, which up to your intelligence modifier per day lets you add your intelligence modifier to mm-hmm. any d20 roll you see within 30 feet of your character, basically.
Which is, like, so awesome to be able to, like, because it's sort of like some of the cleric spells that let you roll a d4 or whatever, but it's a like guidance or whatever, but it's yeah. a concrete number of, I know every time I'm adding yeah. plus 4, plus 5, plus 6, yeah. whatever, to myself or my friend's roll, so that we don't get our asses handed to us. It's nice having a concrete number that you're like, I know that this will help. Because yeah. sometimes, like, if you have a bardic inspiration and you roll a 1, it's not necessarily going to do anything, right?
Yeah. Like I said, it's nice having that concrete number where, like, you know, like, it is a little metagame, but, like, if you're in, like, the 4th or 5th round of combat and you see, like, oh, hey, the 18 missed the boss, but the 19 hit, you're like, okay, we know that the 19 hits. And then yeah. your rogue who has advantage, you know, is going for, like, their big, like, backstab, you know, sneak attack combo, and they're too short.
Yeah.
You know, like, hey, if I use this ability, it is going to hit.
Yeah, exactly.
And the other great thing is, like, you can kind of, like, screw over your demon a little bit. Like, say somebody rolls the attack to hit, and then the demon's like, oh, shield spell. Like, guess what,
motherfucker? Now I can't. Guess what, motherfucker? I have a way to maybe get around that bitch. Yeah. Hey, baba booey. It's they're so fun, even for mechanical idiots like myself. It's a delight to play.
Yes. But getting into we'll get into the RP side now. As we always do, we will start off with backgrounds. That is, I feel like, one of the easier spots to start for people who not necessarily don't know what to do. Because race doesn't matter anymore since Mordenkainen came out, everybody kind of gets that option of the +2/+1 or +1/+3. Mm-hmm. So that kind of goes out the window. So I feel like background is where you really get a solid feel for, like, what did my character do before they were in the
adventure? Yeah.
Because that is so inherent to a lot of characters' backstories.
It's so important. I feel like a lot of people will sort of disregard background a little bit just because they'll look at whatever the feat that you get from backgrounds are and be like, oh, yeah, that's the most useful or whatever. Whereas, like, I have said this before and I'll say it again, I build characters for like based off of story alone. Mm-hmm. Like, I do not build for I do not min-max, like, ever.
Well, I think going into Regnum Vertition, me, you, and Chuck O'Clock, Mike, we all took Celebrity Adventure Scion.
Yeah, because it made the most sense, because we're all Tig's.
We're all Tig and Vance kids who are
celebrity adventurers.
Celebrities, yeah, in the world now. So, like, it just made sense. It just works. Beyonce will never use the feature of that ability.
Never, ever, in a million years. Which is great because I'm like, it just doesn't make sense. She wouldn't use it. Thalia will get the best.
Thalia will abuse it. Thalia's gonna abuse it all the time. Maliciously.
No, I think background is a really good, like, jumping off point, or for if you don't have something in mind already, if you look and you're like, oh, I just really want to play this class.
Yes.
Let me see if there's a background that is a good, like, jumping off point. Or in the case of, like, Tig, I already knew what Tig was like when I was building Tig. And so Tig's background was the guild merchant variant on guild artisan.
Your father had, like, the curio shop or something.
Yeah, my parents, Tig's parents ran a curio and armaments shop in Ligmire. And so they, like, she grew up, like, helping run the shop. And so it was like, yeah, this just, like, straight up, this just makes sense. Like, this is where she came from. This is what it is. And that particular background, I think, is one that you will, in general, see a lot with artificers because it makes sense.
You'll see the two guilds, the artisan and the merchant. Yeah. You'll probably see clan crafter
a lot, yeah.
Yeah, and then maybe failed merchant. Yeah. Like, oh, this was my last big thing.
Score.
Like, I couldn't sell this, or, like, I came across, you know, whatever your artificing tools.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's the suit or the dog.
I think all of those are great backgrounds, particularly if you're maybe somebody, like, I know for a lot of people, because I DM for my home games and I've DM'd for a lot of new players, and I know for a lot of them, being able to slide into sort of a stereotype is a good, like, that's a pretty easy way to just, like, get your feet wet in D&D. But if you're wanting to talk about, like, spicier backgrounds that you might want to fuck with for Artificer, I think Charlatan's a really good background for Artificers, just because, like, the idea of, like, a snake oil salesman who is making potions or building somebody things using, that may not work the way they're supposed, like, to work. Yeah.
Kind of somebody using alchemy and being like, no, it's science.
It's science. It's a magical, like, potion. I think that's so, like, fun.
No, that's just chloroform that you use to knock the guy out.
Charlatan, I think, is in general just such a fun background anyway. Because it's just like, you're a little sketchy. You're a little sneaky. I think that's super fun.
I think they also get, like, proficiency in the forgery kit or something like that.
I think they do.
Which is also really cool, I think, for the artificer, because, like, you can just fake being part of, like, a guild. Like, you can just forge.
I mean, you could forge guild stuff, or you could make, like, you're just a forger straight up. Like, you're making off Brain bots.
you're the Folkley.
You're the Adela's off-brand.
You're just the off-brand of like, you're like the anytime there's like an electronic where like the logo is just like slightly off.
So you've shaved off the serial numbers on your on your automatons, right? I think that's so fun. I think it's important if you're somebody who's not trying to just like play it safe, quote unquote. Like, I think it's important to really like, and I get that this is hard, right? I've been playing D&D for many years, so it's a little bit easier for me. And also, I have a background in improv. Like, I'm just insane. Like, it's really fun to like look at those weird combinations that you maybe don't think of initially and be like, how can I make this work? Like a really good other example of something stupid, but fun that you could do with these is either like the entertainer background for an artificer, because I love the idea of an artificer who like makes like almost animatronics, right? Like, you're making the Walt Disney World animatronics to put on a show for people. Yeah, you're making the Carousel of Progress dad and just shoving
an actual boombox.
Yes, that's so fun though, right? Like, you're doing this for entertainment, and then if in the future you're wanting to multi-class, right, you've already set up the groundwork to potentially multi-class into like Bard, right? Another fun one that I think people don't look at for Artificer, and maybe honestly should, is Gambler. The idea of somebody who like had to learn how to build these things, to either they want it and they're like tinkering with it, or like, I got into big gambling debts and I've had to learn how to start building these things to sell off, to pay those off, is really interesting. Like,
or maybe they built it as like a bodyguard for themselves.
Or as a bodyguard, right? Like, there's so many different ways you can like just really take a background and bust it up to make it do what you wouldn't necessarily initially think. Even if you do decide to play the straight and narrow with it, right? Like, there is nothing... nothing wrong with playing straight and narrow.
It is the tried and true for a reason.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a reason why the PHB is like, when you're building a class, is like, here are some backgrounds you recommend with this. Yeah, exactly. There's a reason for it, and those are solid suggestions. But that's not why I'm here right now. I'm here to tell you, hey, be an artificer who's an acolyte who worships the things that they make. Be an artificer
be a wild spacer who found it in the middle of space. Or
yeah, like, exactly.
One of my favorites is a smuggler who was supposed to smuggle, because one of the, I think the battlesmith gets like a little like pet that they can have.
Turns out they were
supposed to smuggle this thing that turned out to be like a sentient warforged that is now like their battle companion. Like, they're like, no, that's wrong. This is a creature that can think. Like, I'm not gonna smuggle this. This is essentially human trafficking.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's so fun to do that.
My other favorite is archaeologist, who like uncovers something on a dig and then like activates it and is like, oh, you're my new master. Or like finds an old suit of armor, if you're gonna go for the armor one, or the artillerist. Like, you found a cannon. Yeah,
found a cannon. Everybody embrace your wildest Milo from... I was about to say Treasure Planet. That's Atlantis. Jesus, Emma. Milo dreams. Be the archaeologist you want to see in the world.
I think one of my favorites is Boop from...
Oh my God.
Who is, I believe, a sailor or a pirate who went the artillerist route and just took a ship cannon.
And it's just like, yeah, this is my fucking cannon. You want to see the business end of that? Come get me.
Just straight up took a cannon off of a ship. You can do the same thing if you're in a Spelljammer campaign. You could be a wild spacer who just took a cannon off the side of a Spelljammer ship.
It's so funny. Another one that I just don't want to like miss out on that I think is really fun is, I love the idea of an urchin, because I love the idea of young but like savant-ish who has like no resources and is just like, I built this little robo mouse with like the three screws I found over in that alleyway and the fucking gears that I like stole from old man Jenkins down the road. Like, I love the I'm so scrappy, I've scrapped enough stuff to build me a friend.
Build the whole thing.
I think it's so fun. That is
hilarious. All right. So now that we have our background in place, I think the next logical place, at least for me, would be going towards a race. Now, races used to be much more important because races used to have set bonuses. So, like, if you were a dwarf, you had, like, a +2 to constitution and, like, a +1 to strength or whatever. If you were a gnome, you had pluses to, like, dexterity and intelligence. Now, with Mordenkainen coming out, basically every race has an option of you can take a +1 to one stat and +2 to another, or you can put +1 into three. So it's a lot more about just what is your flavor. Yes, some races obviously do have abilities that are helpful.
For sure.
You know, Eladrins, I think, can teleport they once a day or something like that. The Genasis, they get inherent spell casting, you know, whatever. But that is less important. The race is now less important.
Yes, which is, I think, for the grand scheme of things, really good because... It's like a lot of people didn't. I'm a weirdo and I love the challenge of things. So like playing against type for me was fun, even if it was not necessarily the optimal. most optimal. I don't optimize, guys.
Emma is not an optimizer.
It's not for Emma. But I think that this is a good option now because then it gives people more flexibility.
Yeah, the people who do want to optimize, like they're like, okay, I want to play a wizard. Okay, there's like four races you can play now.
Whereas now that are like effective.
Okay, well, if I want to be like a super min max, or like, okay, I'm gonna take this. That, but like, if you just want to play a wizard, like you can play any race now as a wizard.
Yeah, anybody.
Put that +2 into intelligence.
I mean, that's the thing, right? Is like, I think people should be able to play whatever race they want to play, and if that means. I apologize for my dog. If that means you're playing it so that you're not optimized, that's great for people who are comfortable with that, but it's less good for people who are not comfortable with that, obviously. For me, Tig is not optimized even a little bit. Everybody knows this. She's just
the
not.
Minotaur Artificer.
The Minotaur Artificer, who literally, like, the spot where... The Minotaur. That's bad. That's a feel bad. So when I built Tig, and Tig had been kicking around in my head for a long time before TOV, right? She literally came from, I like was like talking with a friend one day and like the thought of like, oh, you should play a bull in a china shop. Like, that's where she came from, was like that thought. And I was like, okay, that's a Minotaur, which is an artificer, which is like not optimized, not what people would expect from the class and the race. But it was so fun because it's really fun to invert that kind of thing on its head. Yeah. Like, because I feel like a lot of people would just play artificers as like, oh, artificers are like gnomes and halflings or like elves, tinkerers, right? Yeah. And being like, no, we have this big, tall woman with a gun. big bull lady. She's tall and she has a gun. Famously tall and has a gun. Yeah. Having this big bull lady who's just like really smart and very clever and like not wise a lick, but is like... And is fairly dexterous for being so large, and is just like, I'm here to build, and to granted her goals when she started the campaign were maybe a little different than when she ended the campaign because of growth, but like was like, I just want to build a bunch of weapons. That's all I want to do is just build a bunch of guns.
And now there's so many cool things you can do. Like I think one of my favorite classes or one of my favorite races to do with this class is a Kenku.
Oh my god, that would be so fun.
Because Kenkus are cursed to not be able to... They're birds who can't fly and they can't speak. So, you could have this Kenku who wants to build a set of armor to give them fight, and they want to build, like, rocket boots with it. Now all of a sudden they can fly. Like, that's their way of flying now.
That's so fun. Yeah. Like, being able to invert it, right? Like, something that would be, like...
I'm just imagining No, I just had a dumb thought.
Of course.
A Tortle, artificer who goes artillerist and is literally just Blastoise. Just has
like, where are you? It's a Blastoise or Bowser. Like, that's where you're going.
That's so good. Just has the cannon in the shell.
Like, in the shell is so funny. Another really
build that later now.
Now you've done that. Now you've done it. Now you've ruined us. My personal favorite race to play are Ganassi. They're so fun, and like. The idea of, and this would obviously depend on campaign setting, right? But to have a Air Ganassi who's like, I'm gonna build something that like is a renewable energy source to like basically building wind turbines.
Into
your back. That's so fun. Like, that's such a fun way to invert it.
My favorite little fun thing was we were in a Icewind Dale Rime of the Frostbitten campaign.
Yes.
And we had I was playing a Lizardfolk Druid at the time, but we had a Bugbear Artificer.
Oh, hell yeah.
With Battlesmith and just made themselves a little puppy. They just wanted like a little puppy. So that he's like, I want a companion. I want a companion that I always have. And the dude just like, it was like this Bugbear who had been all alone that had been cast out from their tribe. Just wanted a little pet.
It was
the most adorable thing.
That's so cute.
I think my favorite artificer that we've seen, and I don't know if they were artificers, I'm pretty sure they were, was Greg in Rodents and Reptiles.
I don't know for certain, but I know that they were
a Grung, and they had this mech suit because Grungs need to spend time submerged in water throughout the day. And so it was just like this, the mech suit had like a water ball in it that the Grung would like set in.
It's just, that's so fucking funny and so like
so good. Amazing of like off the wall thinking
off
of,
the
like,
wall just very different, right? Another really good one, this ties more into like backstory stuff, right? But like if you were to play an Asimar artificer who's like, Asimar are like children of heavenly beings, right? Of gods and
Nephilim.
Yes, exactly. And if you were an Asimar who's like, fuck the gods, I'm gonna do it through science. Like, that's so fun
such a powerful move too.
I know where I came from. Fuck them. I'm gonna build a big cannon. Like, it's so good to just like be like, no, I'm not doing what's expected of me. I love not doing what's expected of me for my characters. I don't know if we've noticed that theme.
Speaking of themes, though, this is going to bring me down to the next point. And one of the reasons I love artificers is that I feel like artificers feel at home in really any type of
campaign setting. They're so versatile.
High fantasy, high tech, like especially high tech, they fucking are.
They run away at high tech.
Yeah. But like, even if you're in like a low fantasy setting of like, okay, well, now I'm like, I can still cobble things together because like I'm not using magic.
No, you're not using magic.
Artificers are half casters, but like,
a lot of the spells that they have, you can flavor pretty easily as something else. That's a pretty common thing for them.
Like acid splash or whatever like that. Like,
you okay, just have a vial of acid.
Yeah, I just have a vial of acid, or I have like an acid launcher on my wrist or whatever.
It's awesome, and I think a really easy way. And obviously this depends on your DM, right? But like if you were playing in a low fantasy setting, so no magic, and even if you're playing in a setting that didn't have like
you're like 1500s English.
Yeah, exactly. That can be a huge plot thing of like, well, I'm going to fucking advance civilization. I'm going to do it.
Like, so you're just start the Industrial Revolution.
You're going to fucking Percy DeRollo it and figure out a way to build that gun, you know, like that's
going back to our earlier topic. Noble, another good background. You just buy your shit.
It's so fun. Like, it's just, they're so super versatile because you can play them in low fantasy and flavor their spells really easily because their spells tend to be very utilitarian. You can play them in high fantasy, because that's what a lot of D&D campaigns end up being, right? Is high fantasy, where you just play them sort of like
and a lot of campaigns do bring in stuff like steampunk or stuff.
Yes, like they for do sure.
Have small elements of some technology.
Yes, exactly. Part. Like the home game that I'm
it's just magic now.
Yeah, I mean the home game that I'm running is like very anachronistic in its like style, like. It's got the old telephone with the fucking, like, you have to take the little ear receiver. Yeah. But they've also got, like, steam engines and then, like, cars that you would associate with the 1940s. And then also, like, a more modern subway system. Like, and an artificer would fit right at home in that sort of setting because it is so bounced around. And then, obviously, in a cyberpunk, high-tech sort of campaign. That's, like... They're like, I'm here to fucking mod your body. Like, they're absolutely built for that kind of thing. They're really versatile.
Like the Ripper doc who's like, I'm going to do surgery on everybody. Here's a chrome faceplate for you.
Exactly. Like they, you can, especially if you consider like their infusions and stuff, like a lot of their infusions are,
it's just surgery.
Are items, right? You have, like, I know that at some point I had given Quincy, Taylor's character, as Tig, I had given him, like the, I can't remember the name of the magic item, but the night vision goggle magic item. It's like, if you did that in a cyberpunk thing, you've just like retrofitted this guy's eyes. You did LASIK on this bitch and now he sees in the dark. And granted, like infusions go away as you change them out. You just fucking repo the genetic opera, that shit. It's great. Like, it's so fun. They're honestly very versatile.
Great. And again, now we're going to kind of swap into the DM side of things.
Yeah,
that
for sure.
Be, if you're running a higher tech thing, that could be a wonderful BBEG or just a bad guy in general.
Oh my God,
imagine there's a artificer repo agent going around like collecting
reclaiming that
eyeballs.
Stuff. That's exactly what they're doing. I'm coming for Blind Mags' eyes. You best come correct.
You better pay me.
And that's so fun. Like, you can really, I hadn't played an artificer before I had played Tig. Tig's my first and really only artificer that I've played, but I've played her. She's the longest character that I've ever played, and I love her more than any of my other characters. So I feel very strongly about a lot of the stuff that goes on with them. Because they're so versatile, one, if you're the DM, good Lord, like, not a DM for me as an artificer, because as previously stated, bad at mechanics, but I'm much nicer. But I know that if it had been you, or if it had been Taylor, or if it had been Briar, like, y'all would have ripped the initiative. All of my really good ideas came from Taylor. The idea to cast, like, be able to cast haste on everybody before the last fight, that came from Taylor. Because I never thought about it.
We had, like, a meeting in RV for, like, a couple hours the day before of, like, getting our fight.
How do we get this done? Because
We had, like, a month to prepare in-game.
In-game, yeah. So we're like, okay, how do we claw every little advantage out of this, right? But, like, artificers can play... You have to be careful. They will play... If your player is smart enough, they will play mean, and they will fuck your shit.
If you have a player who is, like, IRL into, like, science and technology, they will find a way to make a bomb.
I'm never letting my husband play an artificer, because my husband's an engineer in real life, and Waddles Honkerton, the Aarakocra Ranger, who is just a penguin with a jetpack. If I let this man play an artificer, my shit would get so thoroughly rocked. I'm not sure we would be able to talk to each other for like 3 days because I'd be so mad.
There'd be several nights of somebody sleeping on the couch.
Somebody's on the sofa and it ain't me. Because they're like a good way to, I think, DM for an artificer is, so I have to bring it back to Tig, right? Tig, when as a player, I am somebody who likes to leave gaps in the story of the character. So, like, when I built Tig, I was like, okay, she has this gun. It's been in her family a really, really long time. They don't know where it came from. The family member who received this gun like just woke up with it one day. She doesn't remember where it came from. Like, and this was like generations back. Right. And so me being like, nobody in my family's interested in where this gun came from. I want to figure out where this fucking gun came from and then figure out how to reproduce them. Like, so leaving the gap of I, as the player, was like, I don't have any idea of where this gun came from. Here's, I want you, the DM, to figure it all out.
Yeah, here's a little
nugget. Here's a nugget. DMs, you love a nugget. Take a little nugget. I don't like, I do this all the time. I've played Amnesiacs because it's not putting the whole thing.
Yeah. It's just but here's like a little part of my backstory that you can fuck me with.
That you can fuck me with and that you can also like really weave into the story. Like, Tig's gun became such a bigger part of TOV than I was anticipating. And granted, part of that was like Vamp was in that gun, and obviously like that when it's my demon husband was in the gun, and that obviously had its own implications, right? But like being able to give your DM that sort of nugget of juicy stuff, and that's I think really easy to do with artificers because if you're on the run,
so much can go wrong
with that, right? As a DM, really looking at what your player who's playing an artificer is like interested in within that mechanics. So like for Tig, she was specifically interested in weaponry. So it was like, okay, all of my artificer things for the most part and all of my story hooks involved that were weapon based.
And a lot of your story hooks involved specifically Roe.
Involved specifically Ro, which was my main gun, Va Rodesh, throughout the whole thing. A couple of times it was different weapons, but like, I mean, at some point I made a big Zweihander for Ifrin because it was important and attached a gun to Ifrin's arm. Like, doing those things were important to Tig, and even though she grew and she changed over the course of the campaign, that was still like a foundational thing for her. So like being able to go back to it.
None of those things broke the game.
None of them broke the game.
DM, make sure, like you said, make sure you're setting limits. Don't let them break the game.
I think
outside of level 20 wizards,
artificers have a lot of runway.
Yeah,
because they have a lot of runway to fuck.
Infuse to magic items.
They can infuse magic items.
If the player is smart,
if they're not Emma.
If people have ever seen the anime Dr. Stone, they can just do that shit where they just are like, I have way more knowledge than the rest of the society around me, and I'm going to use that to my advantage, and I'm just going to make shit that they never thought of combining these magical items in this way.
For sure. And I definitely, as a DM, I am very pro, like, and being open about this with your players, obviously, that's very important. Yes. Communication is very important. But, like, I'm very pro as a DM, particularly if you're playing with an artificer, that if they, like, build a magic item or if you give them a homebrew magic item, right, that to just be like, hey, this is how I think this is going to work from the jump. But if it will play it with it this way for a few sessions, and then if we determine it's underleveled or overleveled, we can tune it. You definitely have to communicate that to your players beforehand, because if you give them like a sick ass fucking bazooka and then it's too powerful and you like backtrack it a little bit, they'll be upset. But if you go to like every person I've ever played with that I've DM'd for, if I've gone up to them from the jump, excuse me, and said, hey, I'm giving you this, but if it's too much one way or the other, we'll fine tune it. They've all been like, yeah, totally. Because for the most part,
Vivian does.
Viv does that for sure. For the most part, I want to say players and are, at least in my experience, are understanding. We're wanting to, we're little gobbles. We want the magic item, but we also like want the story to be good. And D&D is not a game that you win. I know that some people out there will want you to believe
you can. You 100% can win D&D, and it. The winner of D&D is whoever makes the DM make the most rules against them.
That's why you won D&D. Right now, I'm winning. That's you. You're winning D&D. But like, everybody's there for fun, for a good time, and for a good story. For me, the most important thing is story. Like, I don't do anything as in character or make any choices on my character sheet when leveling up that don't make sense in the story. And so,
D&D is a role-playing game. Like, you need to make sure that you're playing a role. sometimes that role is just barbarian who hits things. Okay.
And that's totally cool. Sometimes it's tall and has gun. You need somebody who just hits a thing. But like, because people are so just wanting to have fun with the story, most people in my experience have been very chill with, oh, this needs to get fine-tuned a little bit. This needs to get bumped up, bumped down, whatever, because they understand like, oh, if I have something too powerful, I'm going to break the game and I'm taking away from other people. Granted, I don't play with a ton of min-maxers, but
yeah, there's nothing worse than being the player who, like, two of the players have really awesome items and you kind of just have a shitty or mid-tier item. And then the other two players just get to dominate everything else because they can do that because their items are just better. And it's just like, well, I don't get to do what I want to do because by the time it's my turn to do it, like, the problem's gone.
Yeah, for sure. You have to really weigh those options. Yes. For sure. And if you're gonna, a thing that I really liked about Rose design for Tig was that in order to use Deathshot, which was sort of, I think, her signature attack.
My oh shit button.
If I used that, it was gonna do a shitload of damage to whoever it hit. But I couldn't use my gun for a minute. So that's 10 rounds of being without my main weapon. So like, it was, having that sort of balance was really nice. I think that's another good thing for DMs is if you want to give your players a really bitchin' weapon or a bitchin' item, have it have consequences, not necessarily the right word, but like something else has to happen.
Restrictions or, you know, like, hey, here's a bazooka. That technology isn't around though. You have one round.
You got one shot. Yeah. Make it count. I think that's like, that was really true with Aftercut that Ghost had was you got one shot with this bitch. Like in order to do the really important thing that we needed to do, you can only do that once, really. And so we got it. Yeah. We got to get it right.
And as you level them down, like if it's not as strong as, you know, your death shot is, like, give it chart, give it, like, you know, intelligence or whatever, charges per day or proficiency charges per day.
Bonuses.
Yeah.
For sure.
And that way, like, that's the other thing is, like, if you do that, then as the character levels up, they also get more charges and things like that, and they just feel, feel like they're growing with it. But you said something that struck with me was, you said you didn't really make decisions until you got to the level. I want to talk about leveling an artificer a little bit in terms of multi-classing.
Tig is a great example of insane multi-classing.
I feel like kind of the obvious multi-class for artificer is kind of the fighter.
It's definitely fighter, so you get more shots off.
Yeah, you get more shots off. Action surge, the extra multi-attacks, things like that. But also fighter kind of has that, fighter is, in at least in 5th edition, like, the every weapon person. Like, I'm just proficient in every weapon, so like,
I'm just firearms
now makes sense. I think a fun one though that I did that I loved was the Grunslinger, who was a paladin. God, the
fucking Grunslinger. Yeah.
Now and we discussed this in the paladin thing a couple weeks ago. You can't, right now you can't do ranged smiting. You can in 1D&D. But ranged smiting isn't a thing, but we found a way around that in that if I called my smite beforehand, I would be allowed to, like, charge, like, as I'm loading the bullet, I, like, divinely charge it or whatever it is. And I thought that was a really cool work. I thought that was a really cool.
Like, it's a great workaround. I definitely feel like
if I miss, I just waste the smite.
You just waited the smite and you waste a spell slot. I think that's definitely, like, if you're going to do a multi-class like that, right, it's important to, like, talk with your DM. So, like, for me, right, Tig multiclassed into Warlock, and she was Pact of the Chain, which means you get a pact weapon, right? Tig is not a melee fighter by any means necessary, and there is a Warlock evocation that you can get later on that is for being able to make your pact weapon a ranged weapon. And I just, like, straight up talked to Viv and I was like, hey, I use, like, that's so far down the line. I use guns. Can I just do this now? And she was like, yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Because, like, in the long run, it's a story we're all telling together. Hold on, I have a question, though.
You said you were packed of the chain, right? If I remember correctly, Pact of the Chain gives you the Find Familiar spell. Did you just not?
Oh, no, I wasn't Pact of the Chain. Sorry. I'm the one where you get a Pact weapon, which is fucking...
Blade.
The Pact of the Blade, yeah. Pact of the Blade, That's me just having a brain fart. That's okay. not... I did not have Find Familiar.
I was like, wait, if you had Find Familiar and we never gave Tig a Familiar...
Tig doesn't have pets.
Which, by the way, Find Familiar is an excellent way to, like, add some stuff in to, like, really kind of flavor... Mm-hmm. You think so? Oh, when they so use the Find Familiar, like whatever kind of familiar comes, like you can really set the tone.
You can really set the tone with whatever familiar comes back. No, so Pact of the Blade, that was on me. Sorry. Okay. That's just me being a dummy.
I got genuinely upset because I thought we missed out.
You were like, Emma, how dare you? No, Emma's just an idiot and has had a long day.
Wasn't upset that you screwed it up. I was upset, like, wait, you had this option to get a familiar.
You could have had a familiar this whole time and you didn't have one. No, I didn't have access to Find Familiar. But, like, if you're wanting to do stuff like the Grungslinger smite through
bullets.
Your bullets, like, have a conversation with your DM. Be like, hey, this is a thing I'd like to do. Is there a way that we can make this work? Because chances are you're going to be able to find some sort of middle ground, rule a cool it, whatever, so that you can make this a more enriching character and a more enriching experience, particularly with multi-classes that don't necessarily mesh as well. Paladin and Artificer don't necessarily mesh great, but if you make choices, like, then talk to your DM, you can absolutely make that work.
Because we decided nothing was funnier than a tiny grung with it was actually a gun blade. It was like the Final Fantasy VIII gun blade that I had.
Stupid, so dumb. Because there's nothing funnier. It's so good, right?
And a little frog boy who also rode his my fine steed was a motorcycle.
The Grungslinger is insane.
It's just a wild.
Just
story.
A wild. What you've made so many batshit characters.
What was. And I'm going to toot my own horn here. I feel like kind of absolutely beloved when he made his appearance.
Oh my God. Everybody I know who listened to the episode that the Grungslinger was in was like, this is stupid as all get out, but it's so delightful because it's so funny. Like,
and you can do that in one shot. Like, the Grungslinger is a one. Like, you
was a one shot. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can maybe get away with it. No, don't listen to him. If it's.
No.
Listen to your Auntie Em. This is what you do, right? You don't start as that. This is a long-term thing. But if you this is the long con. I'm gonna teach you how to do the long con. Listen to Emma. I am also, when multiclassing, a big proponent of, hey, you gotta have a story reason for why the fuck you're multiclassing. Take a story reason for why the fuck she got into Warlock, and that was because of her gun. In joining the judge and whatever. If you start as an artificer, because I think personally that this long con works better going artificer into paladin and not the other way around. Mm-hmm. At some point, find Jesus, find God.
Find any deity. Just any
find any deity. Pick a deity, any deity. Throw a dart at a dartboard. It doesn't fucking matter.
Has thousands of them.
Has thousands of them. Fucking use the bingo roller. It doesn't matter. Find a deity. Build up to when you would devote yourself to it. This can't be an immediate, like, oh, I found Pelor. I'm now a paladin of Pelor. I'm doing this level 2. No, this has to be a long con. You have to have this over, like, several sessions. And then when you, like, are going to make that commitment and do the paladin thing, like, have that conversation with your DM and be like, this makes sense for my character. How can we make this smite thing work? And if it's a long enough campaign, chances are, like, and you've done the work to, like, set this up, chances are your DM is going to be more open to it, as opposed to it's level 2, I want to get my smites on my gun. Like, that doesn't, that's not going to fly. Or if it's a very short one shot, two shot, three shot, whatever, that's different, right? Because then you can do, that's when you can get real wacky with it.
But DMs don't care about you breaking their
no, because then it's a one shot. It's a fucking one shot. Who gives a shit? Yeah. You're here for a good time, not a long time. Other interesting things to multi-class, I feel like, with Artificer. Fighter makes a lot of sense. Paladin's insane. Warlock's insane. I think Rogue makes a lot of sense because if you think about it from the dexterous things with artificers, that's a pretty easy.
Well, that would, like if you go something like assassin and then like now you're a sniper.
Like, exactly. Like that's so clever. And that's a pretty easy thing. Like fighter is like the easiest thing to multiclass in from a story standpoint, because if you're fighting, you've become a fighter. Congratulations. You did
it. I feel like fighter, like, you can justify fighter multiclassing from any other
from almost any point, but like a lot of the other ones you have to do the work. It's pretty easy to justify rogue. It's pretty easy.
I think swashbuckler would be pretty cool though.
Swashbuckler would be sick,
like a flintlock pistol in one hand and like a saber in the other.
Yeah, I think bard is pretty easy to justify, particularly if you do the like music, like if you took the entertainer background, you see how this all jives together. You take the entertainer background, you build the automatons, you like you fucking put together the enchanted tiki room. Hey, that's bard shit, baby. Like you're making music. Like
I'm gonna bridge off of that and go for a triple multiclass here. You go into artificer and bard.
Yeah.
How do you entertain as the you have all of your background branches? You didn't become a wizard blade singer.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. It's real easy to go from artificer into wizard because they're both int-based casters.
And I'm just imagining somebody like they just have a
just real book smart.
You can't use two hands. You have to use a one-handed weapon. Or I think you can dual wield, so you can have two pistols.
dual wielding pistols.
Bladesing. Just dual wielding pistols, bladesing. That's what I should have done with Jason. That's what I should have done with Jason.
No, I'm glad Jason needs to stop. He must be stopped.
But I really like your idea of the warlock of like making this. Because instead of going like one thing, because the Hexblade is an option where you find like a cursed magic weapon. You might start off as a first level Hexblade and then, but you
learn
found
how to build off of that.
You found a cursed rifle or a cursed, you know, pistol of some kind, and now you're taking levels in Artificer to figure out how to tinker with it. You want to get the demon out.
Yeah, you gotta fuck that demon, and you gotta get him out of the gun.
Not all demons are fuckable, Emma.
Debatable. Yeah, that's exactly it. It's so much more interesting and so much more fun if you're building to a thing. And that doesn't mean that you can't come into a campaign. Like, I came into TOV, and I had said, like, up front, like, oh, this is Tig, this is her jam. I am interested in potentially multiclassing into fighter, into gunslinger, or into warlock, dependent on how, like, this was before I knew there was anything in the gun, like, before any of that.
I did both.
I didn't. I only multied into warlock. Because I didn't want to mess with three-way multiclassing. I was not into that.
Shout out to Gamani, though, from TOV, who quad-classed.
Four-way. Jeez. Gamani's a monster.
Absolute monster of a player.
An absolute unit. It's... God, I love her. But, like, that's the thing. You can absolutely, like, come into it, be like, hey, DM, I'm interested in some point... whenever it makes sense in the story, because I feel like that's more important, is to be like, it has to make sense in the story. So what, like, whenever that makes sense in the timeline, I would, if you really want to get it by, so for, I like to, I have said for other characters in the past, like, I am interested in multiclassing with this, whatever your time frame for like how you think that plays out in the story works for me. However, I personally would like to have it done by level 10, because I'd like to have the option of being 10 and 10, even if I don't necessarily want to commit to being 10 and 10, because how the story moves and whatever that might shift. It's totally fine to go into a session zero with your character and be like, hey, this is my dude. He's a weird little wizard. At some point, I'd like to multiclass an artificer. However you want that to manifest is totally cool in the story, but this is just a thing I'd like to do. And then you can at least, you know, okay, at some point I'm planning on multiclassing from the jump into whatever.
Yeah.
I can at least like make the steps, make the choices that would theoretically get me there.
The DM can kind of put those, you know,
put those spots in place,
story points in there. And again, another shout out to our DM, the real Vivian, because in our session zero for Regnum Fetishum, she did that with everybody. It's like, hey,
with everybody,
what's your, like, what is your kind of goal for this character? And I remember on with Thalia, I was like, hey, here, I have two kind of plans that I thought of. You know, this is the main one I wanted to do, and I mainly wanted to do Barbarian Fighter with a little plan for that. And I was like, hey, but I might do this other thing. And then immediately in my session zero, she came.
It became so apparent that you needed to do the other thing.
And I was like, well, I'm doing the other thing because that is... Because
it made sense.
Because the option did make sense for Thalia. But then as soon as I got this magic item, it was like, yes, I personally, Ryan, the player, want to lean into that because the story behind that item is going to be
more enriching in the long term.
Like, yeah. I can still hit some of the story notes that I want to hit from, you know, doing the fighter thing. Because that revolved more around Mashbat and stuff like that, which I'm still going to be involved in. But now I have this whole, and I'm not going to spoil anything for the people listening, but I have.
But we have this other whole fucking, y'all, if you're not planning on listening to RV, change your mind. It's like already insane. And we've done the session zeros.
There were several murders in session zero.
It's wild. You need to get in on that.
There was a serial killer. There was a student got unalived. Another student
allegedly.
Allegedly a student got unalived. Another student was knocked unconscious.
It's crazy. But like all three of the triplets in that like went into stuff being like, this is what I'm hoping to do in regards to multiclassing or not multiclassing. I know that other PCs also went into it being like, oh, I'm hoping to multiclass into one of these or maybe all of these, like having that framework as a DM. I know for me, as someone who DMs for home friends,
notorious note taker / Excel sheet fanatic.
I'm a terrible note taker. It all just lives in my brain, but I do, y'all. I love a good spreadsheet. The amount of spreadsheets I have for RV right now is a lot. I have a calendar with all the birth charts. You have
a list of the
zodiac signs.
The quest lists.
And then I also have Yante's diary is the other thing that I have, which is handwritten.
This woman is handwriting a diary for this character.
I just love her a lot. It's useful to have those things. And it's useful for as a DM to know from the jump, this is what my players are interested in. This is how I can incorporate it in. Like in my home game, I have a player who is a paladin who is belongs to this order of paladins that basically like forgo the self. Like it's not a religious order. They just forgo the self and make a like pact with a dream beast, basically, to like protect the land. It's very cool. And when we were like talking about it, one, God bless this player, he wrote me a whole short story about this order, which was so delightful, and then also gave me a glossary because it's very Dune vibes and I needed one. But it was like we had a full conversation of like, okay, how do you think with how this order is, how do you think that progresses in leveling? Like how you join the order, how it progresses in leveling. It's to be Oath of the Watchers. And he was like, I think that I make my like pact with the dream beast basically at level 3 when I would like take my subclass. I was like, that makes perfect sense. I'm like, and it was like a whole conversation. I think it's really important in that sort of circumstance when you have pretty concrete plans too, to like really have a communication with your DM, especially once again, if you're planning on multiclassing, it's very important to like have a conversation, even if you think it might change, even if you think it might be open-ended, like it was with Tig, where I was like, it might be fighter, it might be warlock, it might be nothing. It was important to at least like let Viv know, hey, this is a thing that I'm potentially working towards.
Yes. All right. So now we have a race picked out. We have backgrounds picked out. We have potential multi-classing thoughts in our head over creating this character. So now we're kind of we're kind of getting to the end of this, and I want to talk about the last thing I want to talk about here is feats that can help kind of round out, you know, because we've discussed that you can do so many different things with the Artificer.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I feel like, obviously, the easiest feat, and again, I know we talk a lot about firearms with the Artificer. You don't have to, but
you do not have to do firearms with the Artificer.
Artificer was put into 5e with the introduction of firearms, and they were the only class naturally given firearm proficiency. So yes. That's why we're kind of leaning into that. So I feel like Gunner is the obvious choice, even though
yes,
it does say, like, oh, it gives you firearm proficiency, which you already have. The big thing is that it lets you ignore the loading property of
firearms. Yes. So I actually ended up not taking Gunner. Tig does not have Gunner on her because one of the Artificer infusions is repeating shot, which also lets you ignore the reload property. So I was like, okay, I'm going to forgo Gunner. And I ended up taking Piercer. Which
that was the other one I wanted to point out. That is,
which is really good because it lets you reroll the piercing damage from an attack, and then if you crit, you get to roll an additional damage die, which is super useful. Tig had sharpshooter, which means that attacking at long range doesn't impose disadvantage, and you ignore half cover and three quarters cover, which makes you pretty lethal. And then it also lets you do the -5 penalty to hit for +10 to damage. Yes. It's all just very useful stuff. That's really good if you're very good at rolling dice, like, say, a Quincy was, and not like, say, a Tig was, who is not maybe the most adept at her gun all the time, famously. Yeah,
you know, and a good way to counter that sharpshooter is if you take that one level dip into Warlock, or, you know, multiple levels,
and you
do the Hex Blade, which now, if it's your Hex weapon, you crit on a 19.
Which now, is super useful.
Yeah. So now you're adding all of this extra bonus stuff to it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think excellent options. Piercer and Sharpshooter are definitely, like, I think the first.
The
two
other
options.
Feat that I had on Tig was Arcane Gunner, which lets you put spells into your bullets. Which is also fucking sick as hell because it increases your range on your spells, by however long your range is on your gun.
I will say, I do believe that is a homebrew feat, y'all. So. Don't know, but
it might be. I genuinely don't know. Our particular instance, it let you attack at close range and let you cast spells through your bullets. It might be homebrew. I don't know. If it's homebrew, make it in your homebrew.
DMs.
Make it in your homebrew. Who gives a shit?
Because adding spells to bullets is just.
It's fucking sick as hell. It's so cool. And that's super fun because then you can put healing magic and shoot your friend. Like, you can do.
Which is something that I've been wanting to build for so long because that is one of my favorite sci-fi tropes is the healing gun.
It's the fucking Persona 3 Evoker gun. Like, that's exactly what it is, and it's so awesome. Those are all, I think, really great feats. Generally speaking, I think if you're trying to maximize either your damage or your spell, like, save DCs and stuff, looking for feats that make sense with the story of your character that boost dexterity or intelligence are both super helpful. I definitely leaned more into boosting my dexterity because my intelligence was already my higher stat, so I needed the dex boost a lot more. That's definitely super useful. I think Artificer is actually a really, really great class to take do those magic initiate dips with.
Instead of having to do level dips.
Instead of doing level dips, because then if you wanted to, like, if you were following a story path that, like, oh, you were sort of talking to a chthonic god or whatever, right? Take a little magic initiate fit into Warlock, because then you're not committed to the whole level if it doesn't make sense for your character, if they wouldn't devote themselves but they're still talking to this person, and you get a little boost, right? That's super, super useful.
And maybe that deity or that being is, like, they're kind of doing the Candyman thing where it's like, hey, you know, first spell's free, like, you don't gotta
you don't gotta commit. This is just a little a little taste,
just a little treat. And I feel like another great one is Warcaster.
Warcaster is great for Artificer.
Yeah, for multiple reasons. A, if you're using the rifle, you're using a tuned weapon, so this lets you use your spells. Your spells that have a somatic component, if you have one of those I know a lot of DMs tend to hand wave some things, but if you're with one of those DMs who's like, hey, no, you've got to have your hand free to do hand motions for spells like you're supposed to. that is very important to have. It also does give you advantage on your concentration checks, which I don't know if the artificer has. I know they have something like haste, which is obviously very important to keep up.
They have a lot of con-based concentration spells.
So that can be very important. And if you're going to do something like, it is also useful, like I said, with the two-handed weapon thing, if you're going to turn into like a dual gunner, or if you want to have like a pistol and a shield, and then yourself like play a little bit more defensive, it can be super helpful. Like if you want to have like your pistol, your shield, and then have the shield cannon for the artillerist, or whatever it is, the protection thing that gives you extra temporary hit points. Like now you're kind of this, if you take that and like the tough feet, now all of a sudden you're this kind of like beefy little,
you're a tank.
You're this beefy little gunner guy in like medium armor and a shield.
Yeah, it owns. Another really good one is, I guess I've got two that I want to like highlight. Taking elemental adept, a lot of the artificer spells are
fire.
Not necessarily fire, but like there are a lot of fire ones, but there are a lot of like damage type spells, right? Like acid, fire, whatever. Being able to ignore resistance, super useful. Elven accuracy, if you're playing an elf or a half elf and you're doing the gun thing, super fucking useful. Oh. It boons your guns and it boons your spells.
I'm not going to say a requirement, but if you are a, if you're an optimizer or min-maxer, you already know about elven accuracy.
Oh, for sure. We're not
We're not talking to you right now.
This isn't for you. This is for other people who are dumb like me and need help.
Yes. But elven accuracy, very, very important. Gets you, whenever you have advantage and you're using an attack roll with dexterity or intelligence, which artificer uses both of those depending on their thing.
Yeah.
If you have advantage, you can then re-roll one of those dice, basically giving yourself triple advantage. And then to go even further, like if you want to add on to that, if you take elven accuracy and then take the lucky feat.
Lucky owns. Like, lucky's such a great feat.
Now all of a sudden you have so many extra rolls that you're making.
It's insane. It's people. Yeah. Make these choices. Doing meta magic adept, also very cool. You can do a lot of stupid stuff with sorcerer meta magic that will just piss your fucking DM off. Like, they'll make them so mad.
I kind of alluded to it earlier. The other one that I took at is Heavy Armor Master.
Heavy Armor Master is great if you don't get heavy armor from a, like,
Not Heavy Armor Master. Heavily Armored. Which gives you the proficiency with heavy armor and then some other things. But if you already have proficiency with heavy armor, like say you start off as a fighter or you have something that gave you proficiency, like you did in an off-time training session.
Yeah.
Whatever. Or if you found, you know, whatever. Heavy Armor Master is phenomenal because it reduces any bludgeoning, piercing, slashing damage by 3. And now, like I said earlier, you're just this heavily armored. You have the shield, you have your protector cannon, like all. You're literally just this.
You're just a tank.
You're just a literal tank with a freaking howitzer out of there. And especially if you go something like Fry Crane, which now have multiple arms.
Oh my god.
Now you can actually have you can like two-hand the rifle, have a shield, and then have like an offhand for doing your somatic components. You don't even take Warcaster at that point. Like,
you can just like,
it's really goofy.
Feats are a good way of like, I did not before joining TOV really engage with feats all that much. Feats are a really good way to both, hey, tell the story of your character. Your character started cooking, you get the chef feat now, baby. Like, it's such a good way to really put stuff on your sheet that reinforces the story. Very important. But also, it's a really great way to like get that little bit of like level bump, but also like make it so you just are able to do really dumb, stupid, shitty things to your enemies.
It really kind of like separates like your character from just like, oh, I'm a rogue. Okay, now I'm a rogue who took Eldritch Adept.
It really reinforces like how they've grown and changed over the course of the story.
Don't be afraid to give out smaller feats has like little things of like, if you have a character who, like you mentioned the chef, if you have a player who in their downtime is always like, hey, I'm cooking dinner or I cooked breakfast after a long rest. If
you find them with the feet.
Yeah, if they're always doing that thing, give them a little, you know, give them that. Because chef feet doesn't fucking really do anything. I think it increases your constitution by one.
It increases your constitution by one. But like,
and it gives you proficiency with fucking chefs.
The fucking chef's tools. But like,
utensils, it's not chef's tools.
It's chef's tools. Dimension 20 taught me it's chef's tools. It's
damn you, like, Lou Wilson.
Damn you, Lou Wilson, influencing me even to this day. I think, like, I'm very pro to, like, I know that in 5e, and I can't remember what it is in 1D&D because I just don't give a shit. The variant humans got a free feat when they started. And I think 1D&D is letting everybody just take a free feat when they start.
Yes and no. There's only certain, everybody gets to take.
There's maybe level, only there's certain only, ones,
but there's only certain feats you can take. Yes, feats sure. are now starting to have level requirements,
which is dumb, which is in fine. My opinion. But that's fine.
It's fine.
I don't like it.
As long as things aren't gatekeeped by like, oh, this is a 12th level feat, and you have to take these, three other feats before it. Like,
which is
now,
really stupid.
Now I'm not able to take ASIs. Now I have to be either. Now you'd have to focus on feats or ASIs.
But I've definitely in home campaigns, just like regardless of race, been like, everybody gets a free feat, because then that, much like background,
I've
right?
done the
like,
same thing.
And influences who this character was beforehand. Like my friend, the friend in my home game right now, the paladin. Much to my chagrin, took Charger as his free feat to begin with. Oh god, he's already a monster and they're level one.
Yeah. Hey, he's just gonna run at people.
He's just gonna run at people.
But I think we're gonna wind it down there. I'm gonna let you have the last word, but before that, I'm going to say obviously thank you for joining us. B, everybody check out Flavored Enemy. We're on all major streaming platforms and podcast platforms. But I'm going to leave you with a really dumb artificer build of doesn't really matter what your race is. I prefer one of the Dragonborn for the breath attack. But go ahead, start off an artificer, then multiclass into Ranger, go Drake Warden for your little dragon companion, and then eventually take the mounted combatant feat.
I hate you.
There you go.
That's so stupid what you've done here this day.
But it fucks.
I guess it does fuck. I suppose.
Now you have a flying mount, medium armor, and a rifle.
Wild, wild things you've done here this day.
And both you and your mount have breath attacks.
Stupid, 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 stupid.
But feel free to take us out, Emma. What is your last bit of wisdom to people who want to make an artificer?
My last bit of wisdom is chase your bliss. Don't listen to me or Ryan. Don't do anything that we've just said. No, like,
don't commit crimes.
Don't commit crimes. No, what I'm saying is like, I have found the most joy out of building my characters, artificer or otherwise, by thinking of the story first. And I would greatly encourage you to do that. It is, you can't win D&D, even if Ryan disagrees. The best way to play D&D is to play it with your friends and tell a story together. And if you build your character because of how the story is taking them and don't plan it out from the jump, I promise you will have a more rewarding experience, because then you have made a character who much as you have shaped the world you're playing in, has been shaped thusly by the world.
Very, very well said. With that, we bid you all adieu. Until next time.
Bye.